Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We're 34 days into the government shutdown. With healthcare workers furloughed and federal funding for clinics suspended, the shutdown is taking a heavy toll on the 2.2 million American Indians who depend on the Indian Health Service. This is despite the fact that the federal government is required to provide medical care to Native people through treaty agreements. In Seattle, an urban Indian health center has been forced to make some difficult decisions.
So this last Saturday was our last Saturday clinic.
Aaron Spark is a government affairs officer at the Seattle Indian Health Board, and he's also an American Indian from the Chupik tribe in western Alaska.
We offer what we consider a very innovative healthcare model called Indigenous Knowledge-Informed Care, which is very holistic. We meet the patient where they're at with traditional Indian medicine at its core, and we're not able to offer that on Saturdays for our community anymore.
The vast majority of American Indians live in urban areas and go to clinics like the one in Seattle where Aaron works. With the partial government shutdown, urban Indian health centers are going without grant money from the federal government.
This does affect our contracts with the Indian Health Service. And when we did the analysis, it's about 25% of our funds. And we looked at it on the weekly, and it's about $75,000 a week. So it's a pretty big impact that we're facing.
Aaron says the health center is also considering scaling back other programs due to the shutdown. But funding from the federal government has always been tight.
We're not funded very well from the federal level. Even though we have this federal trust responsibility from the federal government to pay for our health care, they pay us at such a woefully low level that we have to look at any and all third-party revenue to really keep our doors open.
For more on this issue, we reached out to Mark Trahant.
Let me just kind of take a little back in history.
Mark is the editor of the Indian News website, Indian Country Today, and a member of Idaho Shoshone-Bannock tribe. And he says that while the Indian Health Service budget might be subject to a political fight, it's still a lot better than it used to be.
When treaties were signed with tribes, one of the main provisions of the treaties was to say, in exchange for all this land you're giving up, we're going to send a doctor and a nurse to your reservation. And that, over the years, has become codified as a promise to conduct healthcare. And up through the 1950s, the healthcare was extraordinarily bad and underfunded. One doctor threw up his hands in disgust in 1955 and said, this is just unconscionable. Finally, Congress transferred it to the Public Health Service. And since then, it's been kind of a steady improvement. In fact, one thing that most people don't know is if you look at Indian health statistics in the 1970s versus today. In the 1970s, American Indians and Alaska Natives were had an average age of death around 44, and now it's not that far behind the general population. So there are some pretty striking success stories.
But things are far from perfect today.
The Indian Health Service in general is extraordinarily low-funded. I think the last number I saw was about 60% of need. So compared to any other public health system, it's underfunded to begin with. And urban Indian health clinics are even lower funded than that. They're just 1% of the whole Indian Health Service budget.
Trahant says this chronic underfunding means it's difficult to get medical personnel to work at these clinics.
The Indian Health Service has always got issues trying to recruit physicians and other healthcare professionals, and this will just make it worse.
American Indians and Alaska Natives die at higher rates than other Americans from issues like liver disease, diabetes, and other chronic lower respiratory illnesses. Add to that higher rates of poverty, and Trahant says the impact of the shutdown has been swift for American Indians.
People need medicine, and they can't get medicine, particularly for chronic diseases. That's where it becomes an issue of life and death, and just a great fear on how are you going to get through this week until it's over.
They're just incredibly vulnerable, and they may very well go without that care, and the consequences that occur will be what they will be.
Stacy Boland is an enrolled member of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and the CEO of the National Indian Health Board, a nonprofit organization that represents tribes in Washington, D.C.
Many of these folks do not have a plan B. They do not have access to alternative health care resources, and they certainly typically do not have the funding to pay fee-for-service for their health care. It's been pretty pretty devastating, the impact on American Indian Alaska Native health. We've seen the cutting of programs, doctors quitting because they're not being paid and they have to put food on their tables. They have to be employed. We have tribes that have their administrative staff members have agreed to take no pay so they can aggregate that salary to keep their doctors employed. We have places where clinic hours have been cut to just a few hours a day. Flu shots are no longer being offered. Preventative services are no longer being offered because it's simply not affordable. We're basically seeing the outer edge of a major crisis looming in American Indian healthcare.
What are the options right now for people who need these services? Are they able to go to emergency rooms? Are there other alternatives in the meantime?
Well, many of the tribes are located in rural and very remote areas of the United States, and the treaties create a trust responsibility between the federal government and the Indian people. There is no plan B for most of our people who receive their services through the funding that comes through the Indian Health Service. It's important to note that while the Department of Health and Human Services, that appropriations bill did pass, the Indian Health Service is funded through the Department of Interior appropriations, and that did not pass. So not only is healthcare being completely destabilized, but all of the other services that are treaty obligations of the federal government to the tribes are also being jeopardized. So to answer your question, say you reside on the Fort Peck Indian Reservation in Montana, and you could possibly present yourself at an emergency room for care. How are you going to get there? The roads are not plowed. They're buried in snow. You may not even have a car. You're talking about the most vulnerable populations of people in the United States. Some communities have upwards of 70% unemployment. These are not people who have secondary means to subsidize the federal government's responsibility for their health.
We've heard this phrase before where Americans are, quote, being held hostage by this shutdown. What are the next steps?
We continue to educate members of Congress and administration officials about the trust relationship. In the case of American Indians, this is an abrogation of treaty responsibilities. The treaties that were made with the many American Indian and Alaska Native tribes and peoples actually, in many instances, predate the establishment of the United States. And the treaty relationship with the federal government and the 573 federally recognized tribes are the basis for the government's provision of health care to American Indian and Alaska Native people. And that is a situation that is unlike any that other Americans are also experiencing. Some of our tribes have the ability to bring third-party revenues in from Medicare and Medicaid. And there is some mitigation that's able to happen because the tribes themselves are working very hard to bring resources in to keep their systems operational. Other tribes have taken out loans so that they can keep their health system operating. And there is no guarantee that when the funding actually does come through, they will be reimbursed for that stepping into the federal government's responsibility, the interest on the loans themselves. And another complicating factor that's occurring is in the Indian health system, there's a thing called purchased referred care. That means if you have to go out and see an oncologist, an orthopedic surgeon, there's a certain fund that pays for those services. There is no money. So those services are not being paid, which jeopardizes the relationships with the specialty providers who expect to be paid. In the case of Phoenix Indian Medical Center, they lease much of their equipment, like their CT scanner, their HVAC system. Those vendors are threatening to come to that facility and reclaim their equipment. They, right now, are worried about how to buy toilet paper so that they can keep that inside of their health system. And they've had massive furloughs as well.
Stacey Boland is the CEO of the National Indian Health Board. Stacey, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.